Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
And hello, Judy. And our topic for today is...
Panic and its effects, good and bad.
And so that's what we're going to be talking about first. And that, of course, is coming from my book, which is called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And the book is oriented, along with our podcast being oriented, toward the formula, the 7-word formula that the title of our podcast refers to. And what those 7 words are is be kind, don't panic, and have faith. So the last several episodes, we focused on the be kind part. And now we are entering into the don't panic part of the formula. And so our topic today is actually what I'm going to do today is put in a good word for panic.
And how so?
Well, you know, it's funny. I almost feel like panic needs better PR, you know. We need to be capable of panic. And I should say at the outset, I think I may overuse the word panic a bit when people sometimes think panic and they're thinking extreme reaction. And I'm using it for pretty extreme, but not necessarily like full-fledged panic attack. By panic, I just mean a lot of anxiety. We need anxiety, as I think I comment in the book. It's not a bug of evolution. It's a feature of evolution. It's something that we actually need as part of our evolutionary complement. We wouldn't have survived as a species if we weren't capable of freaking out when we need to. Mm-hmm. And of course, look at any other animals, our fellow species, and you'll note we all have to have ways of dealing with the possibility of being in danger. So if there's some predator looking around, what we have learned to do as a species over the millennia is get ready to fight or flee or freeze, do something that will maybe help us survive. And, you know, just statistically speaking, those of our ancestors who were capable of doing that survived and they went on to be our ancestors. And those of the folks back then who weren't as able to do that got eaten.
So you're talking about the fight or flight reaction.
Fight or flight or freeze, all three. Uh-huh. Those are actually, they involve, I don't know how physiological I would get. You know, the problem when I start waxing physiological is I start to sound like I know what I'm talking about. And it's a bit of an illusion. I'm not a physiologist. I'm not a physician. I did learn, you know, in a couple of courses here and there about how the physiology works. And I often refer to it actually because it's really interesting, but, you know, I'm not an expert on the subject.
But you've seen enough couples who are panicky.
I certainly have seen that, yes. And so that fight or flight part of it, basically, it's a bunch of physiological reactions that get a lot of oxygen to the big muscles so that you can move really quickly or fight really hard if you have to. So panic is an absolutely necessary capability. And the funny thing about panic is it's, as I say, it's necessary, but it can have some negative effects when you get into relationships. And that relates to the fact that we as human beings have these really large neocortices, you know, that sort of, in evolutionary terms, a much more recent part of the development of our brains. And it's built on the same mechanism that reptiles have, you know, and other mammals have. It's built on that mechanism that stimulates the fight or flight or freeze response. But we can do it with abstract thought. We can worry ourselves into a tizzy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm tempted to say unlike other species, but I don't want to speak for other species. I don't know. I haven't been a dog. My impression is dogs can be upset and dogs can show a lot of emotion, but I don't think they worry themselves into a tizzy. They're just experiencing like, oh no, you know, my people aren't around. And so they might panic about that. But I don't think they say, I'm worried that next week they're moving.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm worried that they may be thinking some thoughts that cause me to worry that I might lose them.
Mm-hmm.
But we do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in relationships is we will start to wonder, oh no, is my partner about to reject me, even in some small way? And we can just run with that because we're exquisitely sensitive to that. You know, we don't want to lose each other if we're partners. And so if I worry enough about that, I'm going to be potentially really freaking out. And the thing that happens with relationships that is I suppose I could be sort of clinical and say, wow, it's interesting, sort of, you know, Mr. Spock-like, you know, yeah. Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's that my panic can become your panic and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So if you look at me funny and my mind goes to, oh no, she's unhappy with me in some way. She doesn't mm-hmm. like something I did or didn't do. Mm-hmm. And then I start worrying, oh no, I'm about to lose her. And none of these things are happening at the conscious level necessarily. But I will start to get uptight and behave toward you in ways that might make you start thinking, oh no, what's wrong with him? And then you might start behaving in a slightly anxious way yourself, which will make me even more anxious, and we're off and running.
So you start that whole cycle of anxiety.
Indeed. And that's, and you mentioned, I see that, you know, with the folks I work with, I see that very frequently, that what tends to happen is one person's panic becomes the other person's panic, which just reinforces or just confirms their worst fears, you know. Mm-hmm. If somebody is worried, oh no, you know, he or she is mad at me, and they respond in such a way, either defensively or shutting down or whatever their favorite style is.
Right. Like the what did I do now?
Yeah.
What did I do to set him off?
Exactly. And you know the way you said that, what did I do now? You know, it's that narrative that people develop, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
And the here we go again narrative is just tailor-made to ramp up anxiety. And of course, then, just getting into the physiology again, the people who do research with functional MRI scanners,
mm-hmm.
they can see, you know, more or less where's the activity happening, where's the blood going in your brain. And what they note is that when you get to a certain level of anxiety, whole chunks of neocortex just are offline, which is to say, and I think we've all had this experience, if I get upset enough, I can't think. I just can't think clearly. I certainly can't think rationally.
Sure.
And so, you know, my fears take over, and that can really run amok in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah. So, you know, as I say, I put in the title of this, the chapter from the book, which is where we got this title, Panic and Its Effects, Good and Bad. Good because it's absolutely necessary. You know, there are people who don't panic sufficiently, at least in terms of survival. And you know that because they end up dying of, you know, doing something really rash or uncareful.
So where would panic and its effects, a good effect, be?
Well, the good effect would be precisely that. In other words, the good effect would be it protects me. You know, as I often comment to people, you should feel anxious about crossing the street. You shouldn't feel paralyzed about it. You should feel anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Anxious enough to say, I better look both ways before I cross the street because I'm really anxious about the possibility of being run over. That's entirely adaptive, you know. Now, people who've been through trauma, who've been, let's say, hit by a car when they're crossing the street, or, you know, this happens, I've had numbers of people I've worked with over the years who've been in car accidents when they were driving, or passengers, either one, and they're terrified of driving. And that, again, is a, you know, thank you, evolution. It's like, well, yeah, if you've almost been killed driving, I suppose you should be afraid of driving. But of course, when that exceeds a certain level, it doesn't just make them more careful. If it makes it so that they can't get in a car without being in a full-fledged panic,
mm-hmm.
that can become really dysfunctional. And that can happen, you know, traumas like that can happen relationally as well. If you've been traumatized by someone, you may find that that particular panic response can happen even with someone else who didn't actually hurt you. And that's a very common trauma response. We'll be talking more about that in some future episodes when we'll be talking quite specifically about the effects of trauma and how to heal from it.
Mm-hmm. I think we are at our Ask Dr. Chalmers segment. And this week we have a letter from N. And would you like me to read that to you now?
Please do.
Okay. Dear Dr. Chalmers, I am a 39-year-old woman. Up till now, I've dated only women, but I haven't had a really long-term relationship with anyone. About 6 months ago, I started dating a man, Charlie. He is divorced, in his 40s, with 2 young children. A couple of months ago, our relationship became sexual. In theory, I knew that sex would be different with a man, but since he was my first, I didn't know what to expect. I'm finding that I'm having trouble having an orgasm. I'm afraid to say anything to Charlie because he's a little sensitive about my lesbian past and maybe even a little threatened, I'm thinking. I'm really crazy about him. He's a great person, and we have so much in common. I don't want this to be a deal breaker. What can I do? Thank you, N.
Wow, great question, you know. And first of all, I often feel in situations like this, I need to put my own utter lack of qualification in certain respects on the table, because I'm a lot older than 39, but at least I was 39 at one time. Mm-hmm. Never been a woman, mm-hmm. and obviously never been a lesbian, mm-hmm. and I've never been gay. And of course, if I may point out, you've been 39 at one point, and you're definitely a woman, but you're not a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, unless you haven't told me, I don't think you've had an experience, you know, with dating women. So we are both somewhat out of our league here, but it's worth discussing, not because we're the experts on this. I mean, partly I would be, and of course we have friends and several friends in this situation and other people I've met along the way, women who've had a history similar to that,
right.
where they've dated women or only women and then subsequently started dating men. So first thing I would say to N here is find some other women in similar situations just to bounce that off, because you'll get some interesting insights from people who've actually been in the situation. So, mm-hmm. you know, starting
well, there's that, but I think there's also a communication problem here.
Yeah. And indeed, in terms of the theme of today's show, the anxiety part of this is very much relevant.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what it's sounding like is, and which she says so explicitly, I'm afraid to say anything to Charlie because he's a little sensitive about my lesbian past.
Right.
This is one of those great examples from what we talked about last time of the necessity of being willing to raise anxiety and tolerate anxiety when you're dealing with intimacy. And I don't just mean sexual intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
For her to be able to address the issue with Charlie that she's, well, it, of course, this... I'm finding that I'm having trouble having an orgasm, she says. That, of course, is a very, very common occurrence with women. I don't know enough to know, is it especially so in heterosexual relationships? I don't know. But it's certainly, you know, the vast majority of folks I work with are indeed heterosexual. And I sure hear about that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to telegraph a little. I'm not going to say the name of a person we will be interviewing soon, because we're not going to count our chickens yet. But we are really excited. We're going to be interviewing somebody who has a great deal of experience and expertise around sexual issues. So that's really going to be fun. So listen for that in an upcoming podcast. But in any case, what N needs to do is be able to say what's important to her, be able to say to Charlie, I'm having trouble having an orgasm, and tolerate the fact, again, I'm not saying she should be mean about it, but tolerate the fact that indeed, maybe that will bother Charlie because maybe he is a little sensitive about that, and yet raise it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And try to raise it and not freak out herself. And perhaps she may have to invite Charlie to say, look, I know you could be sensitive about it. I can understand why that might be, but this is nevertheless an issue. And I, you know, for her to tell him, I'm crazy about you. You're a great person. Exactly what she said here. And I don't want it to be a deal breaker, but I would like to improve our sexual relationship,
mm-hmm.
and just put it out there, you know, just be clear about what she's saying. My orientation, of course, is as a couples therapist, so I'm imagining a conversation with both of them where, you know, in effect, I would be inviting N to say what's important to her, and I'd be inviting Charlie to go ahead and recognize his being sensitive,
mm-hmm.
but also get hold of himself. In other words, not freak out, go ahead and tolerate the anxiety, and be able to actually listen to his partner in spite of his worries. You know, yeah, he has some worries that maybe it, you know, maybe she won't be satisfied with a man. That's part of his worry.
Yeah, I think, you know, that sounds like she's a little worried too, that if this doesn't work out, that maybe she'll go back to having, you know, women partners,
mm-hmm.
and looking in that direction. So I think, yeah, you bring up a lot of good things about the anxiety between the two of them, but also her own personal anxiety, because if she's not being honest with him, she's not being honest with herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she needs to figure out, do I want to stay with this man? And is it important enough that I'm honest enough with him sexually to risk that panic that I'm feeling every time we have sex, because it's going to get worse if she doesn't talk to him.
And, you know, something that sort of comes up in this context, which I certainly hear from women, but you would be in a much better position to have heard this from lots. You know, you are a woman and you've talked to lots of women, of course. When she says, I'm finding that I'm having trouble having an orgasm, one of the ways I am told that women will often deal with that particular issue is go ahead and fake it so as not to have to deal with the man being so disappointed that he's not capable of giving that to her. And I'm curious, you know, what is your, I'm going to ask you to speak for all women, you know, what do y'all women say about that, you know?
Well, I think that if you're honest with your partner, you can talk with your partner about it and be able to say, you know, you're not satisfying me. Or I don't think it would be that blunt. Maybe something like there are different things that we can try, you know, either with each other or masturbation or toys or whatever it is that's going to help you. But I think you have to be honest with your partner and honest enough to say that, you know, there are some things that I'd like to try. I think we had that a few weeks ago, right, with the woman whose husband wanted her to watch porn with him. And I think that was a good example of not being able to communicate effectively without panicking. And I think that N is in the same situation here. She has to be able to be honest with this man if she wants to stay with him and if she wants to pursue a heterosexual relationship. That, yeah, you know, heterosexual sex is going to be different than, you know, woman-on-woman sex. And it's a learning experience for both of them. And I think if they do it together, they can grow together.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're only a couple of months into their sexual relationship. And, I would just think that phenomenon of her not being willing to say what's happening, you know, including things like faking orgasms or whatever, you know, her not being sure, gee, how honest can I be with this man? Even though she clearly, you know, she didn't use the L word, but she's crazy about him. So it sounds like she loves him. Mm-hmm. And how honest can she be is partly what she's wrestling with. And I suppose you could look at that. I'm thinking of this, you know, in a couples therapy context. If they came to me at this stage of their relationship, I wouldn't necessarily expect them to be at this really high level of honesty, that kind of intimacy. This would be the sort of marker that would say, wow, they're really developing this because she's bringing it up as an issue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if in fact, instead of writing to me, if she found a therapist with Charlie, that, of course, now there's my bias coming out, right? I'm thinking, yeah, this calls for couples therapy, you know. She needs to be able to be clear. And the fact that she is perceiving it, you know, she's conscious of it as a problem and really wants to develop this relationship but sees this as a problem. To me, that looks like a good sign. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't make predictions. I think I may have said that in some other, I don't know if I said it or not, but I often comment on it. I don't make predictions about the couples that I'm with. It is, you know, I long since realized that I think my guesses would be worse than chance. But in terms of what are the possibilities here, I would think that she's got a good shot if she's willing to actually bring this up with him and go ahead and talk about it. And maybe they can talk about it on their own, or maybe they need a therapist.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a great question. And just wanted to let all our listeners know that we would love to hear questions from you, just like wrote to us. So if you have something you'd like us to discuss, please feel free to email Bruce. His email address is bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And I think we mentioned this last time as well. We are doing an exciting new thing, and I think it's going to be happening. Actually, the next podcast you hear will be implementing this. We're going to be including interviews. We have several people lined up who are really just fascinating people. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're inviting you and anybody you know, if you would like to be interviewed, we're inviting you to go to brucechalmer.com and find the podcast tab. And you'll see there's a link on there where you can actually sign up for a time to be interviewed. And as part of that process, we'll be asking you, gee, what would you like to be asked about? You know, why do you think you might be a good fit for the show? And what we're looking for, the couple of the people that we're going to be starting with are in fact people who work with couples or work with individuals. They are, you know, they're people in not the same field, but in a field that involves working with people. But you don't have to be that. You could just be someone who might be have an interesting situation. In fact, we have another person we're looking for that is in that category, somebody who is herself involved in a couple that has a particularly interesting situation. At least we think it's interesting, and we're going to interview them about it as well. So if you'd like to nominate yourself or anybody else, if you want to nominate someone else, just email us. And if you want to
let them know.
Well, it'd be good to let them know. Yes. Actually, you don't even have to let them know. If you want to nominate somebody, if you want us to get in touch, give us their email address. We'll get in touch. If you want to nominate yourself, you can just go sign up for a time and we'll be in touch with you. So that watch for that in future podcasts. So what is our next program about?
The Death Spiral for Passion.
And that does sound kind of dire, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does. But really, it's a pattern that happens normally. I'm not saying it happens in every single relationship, but it's a very common, very normal pattern that happens in long-term relationships. And understanding that pattern is really just what you need to be able to heal from it. So we invite you to look for that the next time. And as I say, we're also going to be having an interview segment next time.
So if you'd like to read more about panic, its effects, good and bad, you can find this and all our other topics in Bruce's book, Reigniting the Spark.
Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And it is available anywhere books are sold. You can find a direct link to it on brucechalmer.com. And it also is available for Kindle as well as paper. And also there's an audiobook, which I narrated, which is also available as well.
So until next time, remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.